I'm starting to get emails.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott J. Gow. People are saying they can't handle any more depressing economic news. Hey, I don't blame you. It's wearing me out, too. It's been very difficult lately to find good things to report, but we're going to try this morning. Okay, here's something. Industrial production was pretty strong last month. Wells Fargo said profits only fell 22%. That was better than Wall Street expected. And the Consumer Price Index just came out. In June, prices had their biggest jump in 26 years. Okay, that's not so good. But I asked reporter Steve Henn to dig a little deeper.
Diane Swonk is chief economist at Mesirow Financial. She joined us from Chicago this morning where the weather is...
It's hotter than hell. If the economy was that hot, we wouldn't have a problem. The problem is inflation is hot.
Consumer prices rose more than 1% last month alone, but wholesale prices shot up at almost twice that pace. So businesses are feeling the heat even more acutely than you are.
And that means that all the inflation we're seeing today, there's still more price hikes down the road.
The good news, if you can call it that, is that high energy and fuel prices are putting a pinch on consumer spending. That could tip us into a recession, and then inflation will cool off. So look on the bright side. In the long run, maybe this is good for us. Then again, maybe not.
Nothing is fun in the long run, and as Keynes said, we're all dead in the long run.
In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
I tried. Let's see how the stock markets are doing. Well, so far the Dow is down another 29 points, further away from 11,000. It's at 10,933. The NASDAQ has dropped 6, and the S&P 500 is down 2. In Asia today, stocks had minor gains. European shares are mixed so far. Oil did have its biggest one-day drop yesterday in 17 years. It's all the way down to $136 a barrel this morning. The price of oil has people talking about something that was essentially written off in the 80s, nuclear power. Today, Congress revisits how nuclear plants get approved. Marketplace's Janet Babin reports from North Carolina Public Radio.
The Nuclear Regulatory Commission has had a bit of a dry spell. No new power plant applications from 1978 to last year. Since then, the NRC's received 9 applications and expects another 9 this year. One of the proposals is from Alexon Energy. It's one of the nation's largest utility companies. It plans to use nuclear power to cut its carbon dioxide emissions. Alexon's Shelley Keller says this nuclear renaissance is fueled by climate change and by necessity.
This country went through a long period where we had too much generating capacity. Now we need to, in fact, be in another build cycle, and the nuclear comes back into that equation.
The NRC has tacked on an additional 600 staffers over the past 3 years to deal with the new applications. But getting approval for a new plant can still take at least 3 years. Watchdog groups complain that the NRC only skims the surface of applications. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
Money for gasoline is a very popular promotion at the moment. In Wisconsin, a man stood outside a gas station and handed out $128 to the good people of his state. The only problem is he's running for state senate, so what he was doing was illegal. Local prosecutors could charge him with vote buying, but maybe he'll just get off with a warning. You're listening to the Morning Report for Wednesday, July 16th on Marketplace.org. It's one of the fastest-growing criminal rackets in the world. In Nigeria, people are stealing millions of barrels of oil. Today, Britain offered Nigeria help in dealing with this problem. From London, Stephen Beard reports.
British Prime Minister Gordon Brown meets the Nigerian president today. Oil is at the top of the agenda. Brown is voicing concern about the daily loss of tons of oil in the Niger Delta. This is highly desirable crude, the light, low-sulfur product that's turned into diesel and gasoline. Armed insurgents steal up to 500,000 barrels of it a day. And, says Simon Wardell of Global Insight, a further 350,000 barrels a day can be lost through disruption.
A lot of oil is shut in. In other words, it's production that could be produced but isn't because of either damage or risks to employees in the Niger Delta region from some of the militant groups there.
This lost production puts further upward pressure on the global price of crude. The British Prime Minister is offering military assistance in cracking down on the insurgents, but critics of the plan say this could be seen as a threat to Nigerian sovereignty. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Let's flash back for a moment to the Bush-Kerry presidential campaign. Remember that animated political satire on the web? It was set to the tune of "This Land Is Your Land." It was a huge hit. The company that produced it is called Jib Jab. And last night on The Tonight Show, they unveiled their latest parody. These guys are pretty funny, but they are trying to make money. Jeff Tyler explains.
There's war and recession and bad mortgage loans.
And our legacy needs saving.
With apologies to Bob Dylan, the clever folks at Jib Jab can make you laugh. But can animated online political satire make money? Greg Spiridellis is the company's co-founder.
The real focus for us with these big election video tentpoles is to get our brand out there and also to make people aware of the other premium services that we offer.
For $14 a year, customers can cut and paste their own digital photos into electronic cards and Jib Jab videos. The competition is more Hallmark than Hollywood, though Spiridellis says he was tempted when a big studio offered a film deal.
Movies are great, but the movie industry will always be there, and now is the moment in time to really build something great on the web.
As it builds its own media brand, Jib Jab continues to rely on revenue from partnerships with established internet giants like Yahoo. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
Wikimania starts tomorrow. What is Wikimania, you ask? Well, it's the annual conference for Wikipedia. It's being held at the beautiful Library of Alexandria in Egypt. Renita Jablonski looks at Wikipedia's bottom line these days.
You can look up almost anything on Wikipedia, from honeybees to the Bee Gees. But staying alive can be a problem when your product is free and you rely on donations. Wired.com's John Abel says Wikipedia is just scraping by on its annual budget of about $4.6 million.
They're going to have to either figure out other places, other people, other big angels that can give them money, or consider some aspect of commercialism.
Alana Samuels, who covers Wikipedia for the LA Times, says that's not likely anytime soon.
Well, the problem is that a lot of the most dedicated volunteers are vehemently opposed to advertising. If Wikipedia lost their support, it would be extremely detrimental to the site.
The Wikimedia Foundation hired its first fundraising director last year. In Los Angeles, I'm Renita Jablonski for Marketplace.
The people who make video games are here in Los Angeles this week. It's the industry's big conference, E3. You might think video games would lose out during a down economy, but actually it's quite the opposite. Jean-Luc Renault has our story.
Inside a two-story condo in suburban Los Angeles, Eileen Dorn takes on her three kids in a game of Mario Kart on the family's new Nintendo Wii. Video games used to frustrate her, but she's been playing a lot lately. Not long ago, the family of five would hop into the car and head to a water park without thinking twice. But recently, they've cut back. Eileen says she'd rather put money in the kids' education fund than the local gas station.
It's costing me twice as much to fill my gas tank, so every time I do it, I get an internal shudder, and then I go, guess we're not going to do whatever it was we were thinking about doing for the week.
Instead, they've been taking more walks, dealing more hands of Go Fish, and playing a whole lot more Super Smash Brothers on the Wii console they bought 6 months ago.
I think it's paid off in spades, because where else can you get a game where a 5-year-old, a 14-year-old, an 18-year-old, and a couple of parents can play?
The Dorn Wallensteins apparently aren't alone. Retail industry researcher NPD Group reports that Nintendo sold twice as many Wiis last May than it did in May 2007. And this year, overall video game sales are expected to reach a record $21 billion. Wedbush Morgan Securities analyst Michael Packer tracks the video game industry. He predicts sales will remain strong as more people stay home to save money.
I think that consumers really are going to make a trade-off between very high-cost entertainment activities, and they're going to shift in favor of lower-cost forms of entertainment. The Wii is going to draw families together, and I think you're going to see a big shift.
Financial planner Catherine Boyle says many clients see the initial cost of a video game system as a long-term investment.
$250 and it lasted for 4 years for a family of four. You're talking, you know, $60 a year versus a night at the movies could be $50 to $100.
Eileen Dorn can see that. But 5-year-old Aiden likes to challenge his parents to a game of Mario Kart for a different reason.
Because I beat them.
In Los Angeles, I'm Jean-Luc Renaud for Marketplace.
A new report says the U.S. needs more graduates in math and science fields, hundreds of thousands of them. That's to keep up with the rest of the world. Commentator Will Wilkinson says there's one solution, even though it might be a little controversial: let more skilled foreign workers into the country.
The U.S. issues only 65,000 H-1B visas for skilled workers each year, and that's not very many. Senators McCain and Obama have both said they would support raising the cap. They acknowledge we need more skilled workers, and they're right. Yes, it would be good for innovation and growth, and it would bring down the prices of goods created by skilled workers. But here's another reason you might not have thought of: wage inequality. Wage increases tend to track improvements in the productivity of labor, and gains in productivity tend to be driven by innovations that help workers do more in less time. But in recent decades, technical innovation has increased the productivity of more highly educated workers faster than it has for less educated workers. These growing inequalities in productivity have helped create growing inequalities in wages. But that's not the whole story. The American system of higher education produces skilled workers too slowly to keep up with the demand. This scarcity in supply bids up the wages of the well-educated even more, further widening the wage gap. If we raised visa quotas on skilled labor, that would help bring supply in line with demand and reduce the wage gap between more and less skilled workers. These days, almost everybody but their beneficiaries think agricultural subsidies are a lousy idea. They benefit a few already relatively wealthy American farmers and agribusiness firms, to the detriment of poor farmers around the world. But H-1B visa restrictions are subsidies that benefit relatively rich domestic workers over their poorer foreign peers. And so it turns out, many of us liberal-minded college grads are enjoying our own protectionist boost. In this case, it seems the moral outrage is, well, we seem to be keeping it to ourselves.
Will Wilkinson is a research fellow at the Cato Institute. You can find a link to his blog on our website, marketplace.org. And I'm sure you might have an opinion about this. Share it with us online. The newspaper business continues to struggle. This morning, Gannett said its second quarter profit dropped 36% and shares plunged more than 12% on that news. Gannett publishes USA Today and 84 other dailies. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for tuning in and have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.